This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Outdoor Edge. Now, Outdoor Edge is a knife company. We all know that. They offer a complete line of fixed blade knives, replaceable blade knives, and game processing kits, right? So any blade you need to break down an animal, these guys have it. Now, the cool thing about their replaceable blades is, let's say you are in the middle of breaking down an animal and the blade goes dull. The only thing you have to do is push a button. The blade pops out, you put a new blade in, it locks in tight, and you're back to breaking down that animal. You get it cooled down, you get it back to the truck faster, and you get more meat in the long run. So if you want to find out more information about all the blades, fixed, replaceable, and game processing kits that Outdoor Edge makes, visit their website, OutdoorEdge.com, and if you want to save 30% on your purchase, enter the discount code NATION30. That's NATION30, and that's OutdoorEdge.com.
Welcome to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Parker McDonald, and this is episode number 90. Today on the show, we are joined by Mr. Troy Fowler, a.k.a. Ranch Fury. You may know him from YouTube. We're going to talk about heavy arrow builds, why it's important, and some of the things that you might want to know before you start building your adult arrows. This is the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. I'm Parker McDonald, and I am your host. And today, we are talking to the one and only, the Joe Exotic of the hunting world, as he has been called. That is Mr. Troy Fowler, also known as Ranch Fairy. It's a very exciting episode. We're going to talk about heavy arrow builds, why it's important, some of the things that you might want to know before you start your heavy arrow build. So, I'm really looking forward to this. As always, guys, make sure you check out ScreeGear.com, and you can use the code SOUTHERNGROUND, all lowercase, all one word, for 10% off your order at ScreeGear.com. Also, check out TetheredNation.com. This weekend, we've got a teach and train event right here in Coleman, Alabama. It's a free event. It's for people who want to learn more about saddle hunting. I'm going to have all kinds of tethered gear. Pretty much everything that Tethered makes, I'm going to have for you to be able to demo and purchase at this event. So it's going to be at the Coleman Archery Park. If you're around this area, if you're in the Alabama, if you live in Alabama or surrounding states, it's a free event. I do need you to register online. You can go to the Facebook page. It's a Tethered Teach and Train event on Facebook. It'll say Birmingham, but it's actually Coleman, Alabama. And you can take a link there that will take you to Eventbrite, where you can register for the event. It's free, but I need to know for food and all that stuff. So hope to see you guys there. It's going to be a really good time. I was actually at the Nashville one this past weekend, and it was a blast. There's a ton of dudes there. Met a lot of cool people. If you were there, it was awesome to meet you. And, man, everybody had such a great time. So make sure you come out to that. It's going to be in Coleman, Alabama, August 15th. From 10 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon, lunch will be provided, and it is free. We're going to draw for a bunch of prizes. There's going to be drawings for some saddles, some platforms, some accessories, and just all kinds of cool stuff. So it's going to be a really good time. So without further ado, let's get into this episode with Mr. Troy Fowler, a.k.a. Ranch Fairy. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Southern Ground Hunting Podcast. We are extremely excited today because I have got one of my newly found heroes, really, is
that's what he is. Easy now.
That's the best way to put it.
Maybe careful who you make friends with.
Maybe my newfound spirit animal is what this guy would be.
You got Uncle Ted and the Ranch Fairy.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. So, thank you.
I have heard him described as the Joe Exotic of the hunting world.
Oh my gosh, this is perfect.
Mr. Ranchberry, Troy Fowler. How you doing, buddy?
Great, man. I have a Joe Exotic face mask right now. I bought one. It's actually his mouth and his mustache and a truck around it. Man, I'm gonna get a mullet. I'm gonna buy a blonde mullet and I'm just gonna go in
just
with the mask
for
and
it.
Do it.
All I gotta do at this point is just
blonde it out.
Blonde it, man. Just get it bleached and I'm good.
Pull so, the trigger.
Just take risks, you know? That's what you got to do sometimes. So, Troy, dude, do you like the name Ranch Fairy or Troy better? What's your favorite?
You can just should either one. Just call Troy while we're doing this. It's fine. Ranch Fairy will come out plenty.
So, Mr. Ranch Fairy. No, I'm just kidding. But anyways, dude, we are extremely excited that you're here today.
Yes.
For anybody who doesn't know who the Ranch Fairy is, Mr. Troy Fowler, could you just explain that, who you are, how you got your name, where you come from, and what you do?
All right. I live in Texas, and we have a family ranch, and I am the ranch manager. And there's a huge family that owns it. So my wife basically runs the whole thing, and then I'm the guy who digs holes and all that. And there's she has 9 siblings, and I have 38 nieces and nephews. So it's no small undertaking to fix toilets and make dinner reservations and have a refrigerator and that runs. And this, you know, you can't have the mule broken. I mean, God forbid, Uncle Troy, you got to fix that.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, I actually started calling myself the Ranch Fairy to the family because they would call with these there's bees in one of the blinds. We'll get some spray and spray the bee. I mean, it's just like, yeah, right? So as I started evolving, what happened to me was a lot of failure. And so to the audience, you need to reset your freaking brain to listen to me today. Okay.
I feel like I'm watching a real live Ranch Fairy video
about anything but maximum penetration in all situations with your arrow system. So if you do not accept that mindset, you're going to get off the rails. So put it in your head. I don't care about anything else. I don't care about fast. I don't care about anything. Accuracy and penetration. That's all I'm about. So hold on, because I'm about to blow your damn mind. So when I started failing, I killed a deer. He's right there. Okay. He's a 155-inch deer. I killed him legit on low fence place here. He's in the book. I'm not going to book another animal. And I lost any interest in shooting a deer ever again until I found public land hunting. So I'm going to go do that in North Dakota later, blah, blah, blah. We won't get on the side roads there. But I have all these nieces and nephews, so I have cameras, and I help them kill them. So I'm in it, I just don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to shoot another deer for some reason. I don't know what happened to me. I caught a 9.5 foot tiger shark in 96 and quit shark fishing. And so that was off the beach and kind of crazy. So fast forward, I fell in love with hunting great, big, mature for our place, mature boar hogs. And you don't just have, they don't just parade out every day. The little dumb zoomers that are 80 pounds are everywhere, but the big mature ones are really smart. It's like hunting a mature whitetail, and I get 5 shots a year at a big one that's probably 4 or 5 years old. They've evaded a lot of things because everybody shoots at pigs. There's no idiot with a truck gun that doesn't just blast at them just to shoot at them and think he's tough. And I started failing. I was at probably 40% failure rate on the big ones. So we're talking about a mature animal, hunched up in the shoulders, over 200 pounds. And I kept getting this crap about they're tough and they're bomb proof and they got big hair and all this stuff and blah, 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 blah. And I found out I'm a respiratory therapist. That's BS. Lungs and hearts work the exact same. There's no tough. We've got guys in the Ashby Foundation. We have a video of a guy shooting a full pass through on an elephant. So there's no tough. Okay. And I got kind of pissed off. And the only book of literature in 2014 that I could find was Dr. Ed Ashby's study. Go to the Ashby Foundation website after you get over this. I'm a member of the Ashby Foundation. And he was preaching, forget about the speed, super extreme structural integrity. It can't explode at impact or the edges can't dull, perfect arrow flight, high forward of center arrows, and sharp. Those are the top four things. And I said, fine. And I wandered off on my own, and I ended up with a 670 grain arrow off of my compound with a 315 grain single bevel, and I started torching them. Like, nowadays, I'm like, whatever, 760 grain, pull back old Pamela, you're dead. You're dead. Before that, it was, God, I hope this works. And I had a lot of arrows that were 7 to 9 inches in, which should be in the thoracic cavity because the thoracic cavities are very narrow. And I never could figure it out. It was always shoot them and it's a long line. Or you stumble up on one that's dead. Now we shoot them and they go 60 yards, maybe 100. Mm-hmm. If you hit them in the guts, right? If you make a mistake, fine. That's a bad hit. If you hit them where you're supposed to, they're done. You can just walk over where they ran and walk another 40 yards and lay right there. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. And I do it with my nephews. They don't have any money. So I give them 650 grain arrows. They don't have any money. And they're doing it. My friends are doing it. And that's why I started the Ranch Fairy channel. The reason why I used the name Ranch Fairy is I was looking for a name. And on Google, you're either incredibly popular and so you get a lot of views, or you're unique. It's just an algorithm. I typed Ranch Fairy into Google and nothing came up. I bought it and said, I'm going. And nobody forgets it either, right? I mean, Troy Fowler, I'd get lost. So that's where I came from.
That's cool. That's cool. And so I found out about you, I don't know, a couple years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, from a buddy of mine named Clayton, who's a close friend of the show, Clayton Bond. Yep. And he's like, have you ever heard of the guy Ranch Fairy? And I was like, no. But that sounds like somebody I'd like. I'm originally from Texas.
Camp.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like a Texas name. Sure enough, you are a Texas guy. And Texas is very close to my heart. It's the best. It's really the best country in the world, I think. Texas
it is the best country in the world.
And there's Whataburger in Texas, which is also a big deal. Yep. So I found out about you and I was like, okay, you know, and I'd been so frustrated with the way that my bow was shooting fixed blades. So I already knew at that point that I wanted to switch to fixed blade broadheads and get away from flappers, as you call them, or mechanicals.
Flappers.
And, you know, for me, I'd always shot them. You know, you can throw them on with your – they're going to hit with your field tips. Good to go. But I had a bad experience. And like a lot of people. Actually, I had a lot of bad experiences. This is actually just one of the ones that I found and knew exactly what the arrow did at that point. Yep. And it was that it it deflected off of a rib, and there was an entry hole. People who are watching the video will be able to understand what I'm saying. If you're listening to it, you know, just pay attention. So it was an entry hole, and then right underneath it was the exit. And but it was a perfect shot right in the soft part, right behind the shoulder where you're supposed to, you know, pass through. It's going to be perfect.
You got like 2 inches of penetration.
Yeah, I don't know how I found the deer. First off, I mean, and so I had that experience, and I was like, you know, I'm on a fixed blade. So I went to fixed blade, and what do a lot of people figure out once they start shooting fixed blade? Oh, crap.
Their arrows are flying sideways. They just don't know.
I mean, I'm like, you know, busting sideways. I missed so many deer that year because for that reason, because I just wasn't even hitting even close. And so then I started, you know, this off season is when I really started doing it. And I'm happy with it. You know, I'm glad I found what you're doing. I know a lot of people listen to this, know exactly who you are, and they're doing the same thing. But how long ago was that when you started doing that?
I've shot fixed blades most of my life. The only reason I shot the Rage and shot that wildebeest with the Rage is because the guide said, this is the greatest bonehead on the planet. This is 2008, 2009. And it was when the Rage first came out. And when you're shooting a water hole shot, right, Africa, it's a hit blind deal. You're 20 yards. You're shooting at a freaking VW. Everything's huge over there. Impala are huge compared to a deer. And then a kudu. I killed a kudu and a wildebeest and some blesbuck and some other stuff. Shooting at a kudu, shooting at an elk. So I killed kudu with a Magnus Stinger, but I wandered off about 2014 to the high FOC hand sharpened adult broadheads, and it was a massive learning curve. Mostly arrow tuning has been the thing that I have in the last 3 years. My arrow, it takes me 30 minutes to build an arrow. Mm-hmm. One.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's it. I'm a little faster than that now, but if you include fletch time and jacking around and getting it right, it's a 30-minute deal. It takes an eternity, and then when they break, you're just like, and I break a ton of them. I aim for a pig, and I say, I'm breaking your other shoulder. Okay, so that arrow's done.
Yeah.
Whack, and about 50% of them anchor in the offside shoulder, and they run off with their butt kind of going sideways, and you got them. So for lethality, remember, I'm a penetration and kill guy. I'm not all about the flash and trying to match my wingdinger to my, make sure the color of my back bar vibrating thing is my peep sight and all that. I couldn't. I have duct tape on my stabilizer because it broke in the Gila hunting elk, and I taped it then, and I just never turned it back. So easy. But bow arrow tuning is probably the biggest aha moment, and I've got the wizard in the background, one of my subscribers I've become great friends with. He's in Louisiana. The son of a gun knows everything. And he's the one who showed me how to knock tune, insert tune, play with the weights, get the arrow bare shaft perfect. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden everything flies. I can shoot the inch and a half wide iron will, 315 grain tough head. The arrow's got to be right. You can't just put them on one arrow. You got to spine up for the heavier stuff. But my bow, I've got 5 different combinations that'll fly bare shaft perfect. Mm-hmm. It takes time.
Yeah.
If you're not willing to put out the effort, fine. Go shoot the flappers and bounce off. Fine. I prefer you don't do that. But I can't stop people. So
yeah,
that's the biggest aha thing.
Yeah.
I shoot 2 inch tall, 1 inch, 1 inch tall, a half inch tall stop droid. 1/2 inch tall, 2 inch long feathers. Tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they don't need steering. Yeah. If you think you're steering your arrow with the fletching, you're wrong.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what I've learned that. I mean, through this whole process, I'm interested to know, I've heard you say a lot. And if somebody who's listening to this or watching has never heard anything from the Ranch Fairy, but you say a lot that you don't know much about the bow. You don't have a bow press.
Yeah, right. I don't know much about bows.
So
I don't have a press. I don't know how to flip the wingdingers and twist the cables. I do not know anything about that.
So my question to you is how are you doing all of this stuff and not working on your own bow? Because that seems to be the most important thing that I'm finding about my setup is is, you know, just, I mean, little things within the components of the bow itself and not necessarily the arrow. Can you kind of explain to me how you're doing that? I've never heard you talk about it before, so I'm interested to know.
I'll go through the, you know, order of operation.
Yeah.
How's that?
Yeah.
So the first greatest thing that most people are doing is you're shooting a banana. If you listen to your shop guys and you listen to the industry standard, you're shooting a banana. Anybody shooting 60 pounds should not be shooting anything under a 300 spine arrow with 125 or more up front. Okay. A 340 will tune with a 75 grain point. But if you're going to shoot an adult broadhead that's 125 grains or greater, you got to go to a 300 spine or stiffer. Okay. That's the first problem is I get a lot of people who email me and say, dude, I got a 340 and I loaded it up with 250 grains. It's tearing 8 inches to the right. I'm like, yeah, no doubt. It's coming off like, it's like a piece of 8 foot PVC you're holding in the middle when you hit the trigger and it's coming off sideways. So I'll just do my, why it takes 30 minutes. How's that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first thing I do is I use JB Weld on all my inserts. I take a Q-tip, I put alcohol on it, I stick it in the end of the arrow and clean all the dust out. I wipe down every individual insert with alcohol so that there's nothing on them as much as I can get. I don't touch them with my fingers. I use JB Weld because it's really slow set and you can work with it. You don't want a fast set epoxy or something that's just going to bind up and then you're screwed right there. It also, it takes 12 hours, 14 hours to cure. So you can't shoot it right off the bat. I take the insert. I got a broadhead that's straight. Doesn't matter what it is. I stick the in. I put the JB Weld on. I put the screw, you know, put it in, spin it in, wipe it off, put the broadhead on, and I spin it on either a spinner or my table. I usually just spin it on a table, and I adjust the insert and rotate the insert until that broadhead's spinning straight. The connection between the end of your arrow and the ass end of that insert is not necessarily plumb, and they were not manufactured together. You can find plumb by rotating your inserts as you insert them. Don't just, you go to the shop and they put them in, they go, bam, whoo, bam, whoo, bam, whoo. Yeah, great. When's the last time you changed the blade on that saw? It could be cutting like this.
Yeah.
They make arrow squaring tools that grind off the end. The easiest one to get is Luminox Fast Tool. I don't find that I have to use it very often.
That one, that's okay. The G5.
Yeah. Or that. Right, the G5. Sure. And then that sets up and it takes, I'm basically working on it the next day. Mm-hmm. Usually I'm doing a set right now for one of the hunting public guys. So my next step is if I've got a brand new setup, I've got a 300 spine and a 250. Okay. And I do the same thing with the insert. I set the 300 up and I set the 250 up, let them dry. And then I shove the knock in the back and I orient the label up. If it's got a label on both sides, I mark it with a Sharpie so I know where up where I started. Mm-hmm. I get about 10 yards on my target and I shoot it. And if it goes like this, I rotate the knock. You won't believe what'll happen rotating the knock.
Yeah.
It's freaking witchcraft.
Yes, it is.
So for those who are listening who are now mind blown and have no idea what I'm talking about, it's fine. I didn't either. So carbon arrows have a seam. And if you've never built a custom fishing rod, you do the same thing with them. But anyway, the stiffest side is the seam side. And then progressively it's stiffer or softer. And then there's a super soft side. You're trying to find where your bow wants to shoot that individual arrow as you turn the knock.
Okay.
It's like shooting bullets through a rifle and then it eats 100. I got a 30-06, it eats 165 core locks like candy and 180s and shoots okay.
Yeah.
It's just like that.
Yeah.
You just keep turning the knock, don't assume anything. I don't know if you're finding a very, don't have a spine tester, so I don't know if that spot is the same. I would assume it is. Mm-hmm. Right. But I don't think you need, for all three of us on here, if you shoot my bow, I bet you the knock tune's different. The way you hold it, the way you push it, there's these little subtle things going on when you release the bow and you're fine tuning that shaft's flex point to you It's super custom there. When you find that thing that shoots, you keep rotating the knock, and all of a sudden it'll go. I mean, it'll be whoop,
yeah.
And you say, good, done. And I mark on the shaft and the knock where that spot is. And go to the next one.
So let me ask you this. You talk about the arrow build itself, and we'll keep going more into that, basically working our way through the arrow.
Yep.
When you are when you're, say, somebody transitioning to this style of adult arrows is what you call them.
Yeah, right. Somebody is shooting 400 spine in the flapper and they want to jump.
Yep.
Right. Right. Okay.
Do you?
So that process is a little different. You do the insert tune. You do two different spines. You get the spine. You email me. I'll tell you what spine to start with because it won't work on a really soft arrow.
Yeah.
The arrow just tears like crazy.
Yeah.
You get a random assortment of different weight field points. So you do your insert tune. You get two different spines of arrows. And you find, Ethic sells them, and a few vendors. Three Rivers has a kit that goes from 200 to 315. Get a stock, get two spines that are above what you got, get a stock insert, and then the heavier points simulate a weighted insert if you want to shoot 125 grain point and an extra heavier head. I stand back, and best thing to do would be to paper tune. So if you want to do this from the get-go, you go on YouTube, find a paper tuning video. There's millions of them out doing it. I mean, it's already done better than I can do it, so there's no reason for me to do it. And you get back and shoot through paper and keep changing points, okay? This is before you nocturne. All of a sudden, there'll be a couple that you'll get tears like this, and then you'll get that. It'll just progressively show you, once again, refining spine, what your bow wants to eat, at your draw length, at your draw weight. Somebody shooting 25-inch draw at 70 pounds is not a guy shooting 31 inches at 70 pounds. It's not the same.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks that's 300 spine. No, a guy shooting a 25-inch long 300 spine arrow is shooting like 170 spine. That thing's like a freaking rail.
Yeah.
And then a guy shooting 31 inches is bending it pretty good. He needs a spine up. He could need a 200 spine arrow. So you shoot through the field points, and all of a sudden there'll be two or three, and sometimes multiple combinations. I've got four or five people who sent me everything shoots straight. I'm like, okay, is that a problem? No. So after that, when your tear goes from, say, this or this down to, let's say, quarter size, 1 inch, then nocturne that arrow.
Okay. All right.
And it can take forever. I mean, it can take if you get frustrated, just sit down, don't pop Xannies. Don't start drinking, beat the dog, just set it down, you can go back, do something else, go fix the dryer,
yeah,
and then, come back to it.
Troy, that was one thing.
Just catapult.
Yeah. Yep. I think it was one of the things that I was struggling with in, because that's what I did the whole thing just like that, but I know a lot of people are struggling with, because they're wanting the bullet hole right off the bat in the sense of absolutely completely perfect. And what you're saying is, if you're doing it like that, if a guy's going from a 400 spine to the jump off to get they get on Cirrus, get the 250 wrench free kit and all that stuff,
sure.
you're saying just get whichever one paper tunes closest to a bullet hole, run with that.
Yeah, improve.
Okay.
Right, improve. Listen, there's a lot of tweaky bows out there. This is one reason why I'm not a bow dork.
Right.
My VXR 2754, and I was shooting sideways. Well, let me get out the chart here and 6,000 bows and try to figure out which ones are torque sensitive. I'm not doing it. There's a lot of you idiots out there, sorry, who bought a 28-inch bow and you're pulling 30 inches. Bro, it's torquey. I can't do nothing for you. You listen too much to too many people. I shoot a 670-inch long bow. Somehow I managed to get an arrow into stuff.
Yeah.
70 inches long. If you guys with long draw lengths need to be go get a Prime 35 or something. Yeah. Get a slower bow that's long.
Yeah.
God, I'm tired. Yeah. I get lots of poor guys are frustrated as hell. The tears are all over the place. They send me pictures and it's left, right, up, down, all over the place. I say, what you shooting? Well, I have a 29-inch draw length. I'm shooting a 28-inch axle bow. I said, well, I can't do anything for you. Mm-hmm. Your $1,000 is burned. So you need to just get it as good as you can.
Yeah.
There's a lot of torque sensitive bows out there. You need to be looking at that when you buy them. I got Elite sent me the Cure. I'm not really brand specific, but that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just nice and smooth, not super fast, but when you I choose 5 different arrow setups.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Bear shaft. It's just, and then it's got some stuff on it. You have to look it up. I'm not really trying to promote Cure, but that particular bow has been a dream to shoot.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've got a couple others, but it's been great. And the guys, it seems like the guys who have 30, you know, longer bows are succeeding easier. But back to your point, if you go from a 4-inch tear down to inside of an inch, don't pull your hair out. You've improved a ton. And then when you get there, you bump your rest towards the knock.
Okay.
So you bump it. There's this way. You're actually moving you're not going to move the knock. You're moving the point.
Right. So people who are listening,
towards the knock.
If you're listening to this and you're not watching it, basically, if you've got a tear that is tearing the knock to the right, then you move the rest towards the right.
The knock side. Right.
Right.
And I mean a little bit.
Yeah, not much. A lot. A little goes a long ways. Yeah.
It's got to stay around center shot, because if you don't, you can take a bow, and I've done it, and push the rest way to one side and have it pointing off like that, and your sights are here. And you can zero at 20, but it keeps going that way. Mm-hmm. So at 30, 40, 50, if you had a sight that went like this, you'd be fine. But they don't make those, I think. So it's a huge, back to where I started, when you get an arrow that flies bare shaft, awesome, much improved, fletchings don't have to work. Mm-hmm. Accuracy goes way up. Fixed blades fly. You penetrate things because that arrow is flying plumb. I don't care about how fast it's going. My bow shooting 760 grains is 235 feet per second. And it's a 340 IBO bow. One of my bows. I have an Expedition Excursion 6. It's 5-inch brace height, and it's a rocket. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute screamer, except I shoot 760 grain arrows on it. Dude, they don't stop.
Yeah.
The arrows don't stop.
Yeah.
They hit whatever. They don't stop. I've cut the humerus off 2 pigs shooting intentionally, quartering in with the tough head, and it goes chut. And it goes right in the dirt. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So,
Troy, also,
it's all about the mass. Yeah.
One of the things that I found, and I literally, it's funny that we're having this conversation, because I just came from the archery range prior to doing this podcast, and and me and Parker both made the jump to heavier arrows, I'm 2970, and so I'm shooting a 250 spine, but I jumped up to a 300 grain broadhead. And so with 100 grain insert, so I'm looking at right around that 720.
You're shooting a Cape Buffalo arrow at deer. That's awesome.
But what's been the struggle is, and you go to the archery range or you're out shooting there with your buddies, and they all have, you know, the flappers, and they're like, pow, pow. And then I get mine out and it's like, boom, you know, cause it's heavier. And they all look at me like real weird. How do you, how did you get over that mental side of it, in the sense of, oh my gosh, like this is, cause I can see my arrow now, you know, and with my old setup, it was like there, you know? So how someone getting into this, that's been taught speed their whole entire life, how did you get past that mental block there?
Well, I opened up this conversation by saying I was failing.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty practical, and I don't give a damn. I don't have that many friends. So I try to wander. I'm a natural loner, and I do whatever the hell I think. That's how I'm wired. And if it's not working, I'm going to find out what works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care. I just don't care. So the peer pressure side's actually a very tough thing. If you're not running with the herd, everybody's going to say crap to you. Right. I don't give a damn. Right. I don't care. When I was 35, 40% on big pigs, it got to the point I was probably like, done. I was like, I know enough about the pulmonary system that it's no different. I had a cadaver for 6 months with needles in it for a test. And they take the heart out and turn it backwards. You had to orient the heart first and find out which artery you're looking at. Mm-hmm. I have a pretty practical knowledge of how stuff dies.
Yeah.
To a level that most people do not. 95% of bow hunters do not have any practical application in the death of things and how putting a hole in them kills them.
Yeah.
I do. And I wasn't killing them. And I got pissed off. I was like, well, might as well just get a gun. I mean, my freaking 30-06, you cork them in the head, they don't run. I've got a 44 mag lever gun that is fantastic. Get about 60 yards from them. The sound of it hitting their head is just awesome because it just goes pop. It's awesome. And that's high FOC right there, 240 grain. They're going about 900 feet per second. But you just got to get close. But I wanted to be a good bow hunter. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't willing to sacrifice. And then, you know, y'all said, you know, I missed a bunch of deer. You ever get frustrated at that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's where you got to draw the line. Secondarily, if our sport's going to survive, you better damn well start killing some deer.
Yeah.
Because I think we don't want people to publish what the actual effectiveness rate of archery is.
Yeah. Well, that's what kind of got me going down this road a long time ago, was in the sense of, I was set up, a small buck walked out, and I found, and I've told Parker this, one of the reasons I made the switch to heavy arrows is I found that my miss is in that shoulder. That's my miss. And so
you're what, this is what I call a bump. A miss means you hit them and they don't break.
Yeah, I hit them. I was shooting a flapper arrow.
Yeah, gotcha. By the way, they jump the string a lot.
Yeah. But both of them, all my misses seem to be forward, right in that shoulder. And so for some reason I thought just buy another broadhead that was the same weight and put it on, it's insanity. And so.
Oh, I did it. I changed broadheads 15 times.
Yeah.
I had a horrible.
Yeah. And so.
I'm right there with you, bud. And you can't shoot a pig back.
Mm-mm.
They're a giant gut box with a pump with lungs about the size of both your hands. A big pig's lungs are that big.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't shoot them in the back.
Yeah.
There's nothing going to kill them. Yeah. It's all intestines and a stomach the size of a 55-gallon drum.
Right.
They're trash cans running around.
And one of the other points that I was really impressed on that I hadn't thought of, I saw you on another podcast or video, if you want to shoot an animal perfectly broadside and you can hit the same spot every time, go ahead. But I know for like Parker and I that hunt public land, we don't always get to trim the lanes and have all that stuff. And so we, there's been a lot where we've hit back and, or that duck, just like you said.
What you're explaining is you're taking the shots you got.
Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. Taking the shots that I got. Cause back in the day I had to wait. It was broadside, had to, because it was just going to bounce off that front shoulder.
Listen to me. Okay, so in your defense, you're being a very practical person.
Right.
So you guys that are passing shots that are questionable, I applaud you, because mm-hmm. you don't have the right tool for the job.
Right.
That's good. That's good. I'm not going to knock you for taking. I told the hunting public guys when they were down here hunting with me, I said, Aaron had a big 6x6 bullet 12 yards 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know how long ago. He showed me the clip. And he drew and he said, in my head, it was came to a call. It's quartering to a little bit. It wasn't terrible. He's pretty broadside. And he said, I just remember all the bad. He said, literally, it was in my head. He was a videographer for one of the companies before he started the hunting public. And he said, I've got 150 kills on video. And he said, I literally drew and said, I can't shoot. That's not, I cannot, I don't know it's going to work. And he let down. That's a great decision. Mm-hmm. It's terrible that you work that hard. And you guys are public guys. I don't know anything about public. I mean, I'm going to North Dakota to go public hunting. What the hell? Who knows what's going to happen there, right? But I talked extensively to the hunting public guys since last August, and I was with them at ATA, that y'all don't get – you're swinging out of a tree. Yep. The deer aren't baited. They don't stand around. Like, we hunted baited deer here. So you can wait, right?
Right.
So you need something that you can do what you need done. Mm-hmm. And there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
So
that's
there's nowhere else to go. You can either be very practical on your shot selection, which I applaud, or you can try this Martian stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But being practical on your shot selection, in my case, which is what brought me to this place mm-hmm. in the first place, I waited for a great shot, broadside, a little bit quartered away.
And you still hit the ground.
And I still went
downhill. The wound channel is literally that long.
I mean,
that's where it starts to get wonky. Mm-hmm.
And I've had that a lot.
Yeah. No, I've been there, dude. I've done it.
Yeah.
I bounced a Schwacker off of a pig that weighed 220. I've got on one of my first videos, and I shot him right where he had to be shot, 17 yards, with a 400 spine arrow and a Schwacker. Mm-hmm. And about it hit him and stopped. And he ran by, hit the deer feeder leg, and it flew out of him. And that was the end of it. And I was already tinkering with heavy stuff. And I built a 670 grain arrow with the Grizzly, as close to what Ashby said as I could. And I killed him 2 weeks later, 60 yard tracking. I didn't have to track him. I shot him, it buried to the fletch. I looked out the window of the tent line, and I saw dust. And I said, "Nah, maybe he's over there."
Yeah.
And I walked over there, he was dead. So let's back up to shooting at the range. When you're plunking your monsters in there, what's your accuracy been like? You guys aren't newbies at this. Mm-hmm. Has your arrow consistency? Can you feel like you can make a mistake? You don't have to have you're peeping the right spot. You got to flex your ass just right and have a duck sitting on the moon.
That's,
and the wind can't be blowing, God forbid, right?
Yeah, that's how I feel, is that it's actually given me more confidence in my shot and my process of shooting. And plus, I mean, it's funny because I like turn it loose and there's no sound to it because all the energy gets forced to the arrow and flinging it forward. And so that's something that all my buddies have said is like, dude, yours is really, really quiet. I'm like, yeah. And theirs is louder. Now theirs is faster. But then we get up to the target and I'm consistently finding that my heavier setup is a good 8 to 12 inches deeper than theirs, even with field tips. I mean, everything's the same. We're both shooting field tips, so it's not like they have their expandable on. It's field tips, and I'm finding 8 to 12 inches deeper. And then they're looking at it going, man, that's deep. I'm like, yeah, you should try it. They're like, ah, no. And a lot of it for them is just the convenience factor. They like to be able to go to the shop, buy their 400 grains, put the 100 grain rage on, and then go shoot.
We're gonna, we'll get there, right? Yeah. There's a ton of people who think I'm crazy, and that's fine. But like I said, this all goes back to failure for me. It's a total failure story.
Yeah.
And there's another part of that that it contributes to failure, and I'll get to that in a minute. But let's stay on topic here. One of the things, I am not a form guy. I don't sit around getting my reps, taking pictures of myself, and trying to make sure my elbow's at a 42 degree angle. I don't have time. I don't shoot a peep sight. I shoot the EZV sight, which is the most practical bow hunting sight on the planet. And I shoot a kisser button, and I'm rarely in the same spot. But my arrows behave. Mm-hmm. It's like they compensate for my idiot, for the Fowler idiot, rather than the other way around. I remember having them really light, fast arrows and wondering, why is there always one that's a 4-inch flyer? Mm-hmm. Why? What's wrong with me? I see people post their thing. I put in my 100 reps today. Got my ass flexed just right. My lip was good. I'm thinking, wow, that's really a lot of effort. I'm not doing that. I shoot about 10 arrows a week. I don't shoot. I just don't shoot. I'm tuning up this set of arrows. I'll probably shoot them 35 times, getting not tuning done. Mm-hmm. I spend all my time getting the arrow perfect, and then I don't have to be perfect.
Right.
It's just a totally different way. For everybody's listening, just hang on. You'll be fine. It's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. I'm off the rails. I get that. But I am all about your effectiveness. And I want to also broach something on shot placement and the shots you take. I am not saying intentionally take irresponsible shots.
Right.
You still want a quartering away deer that's looking away from you. Mm-hmm. And you just pound him and aim it and try to break the offside leg.
Yeah.
If they leave like a three-wheeler, they don't go very far.
Yeah.
If the opposite side leg goes up like this, they're done because you've gone right through the pulmonary system. You have to hit that bone, right? With your setup with the tough head, you'll shatter that other side. It'll probably come go through.
Yeah.
But when you get those quartering two shots and then you decide to shoot, which there's a lot of people going to bounce flappers off a deer because they got 5 days to hunt and that's the shot they got and they lost them.
Mm-hmm.
You can get in there tight and rock them.
Yeah.
It may only penetrate 14 inches, but we've got Rob Nielsen at the Ashby Foundation. His wife shoots a 43-pound bow at 24 inches. She thinks deer are hilarious and pigs are a pain. Like, she just like, yeah, whatever, I just kill those. She shot 5 or 6 Nilgai. Nilgai are 600 or 700 pounds, much tougher. Their skin's like 3/4 of an inch thick. They're a species of antelope that the King Ranch brought in down here, and they've gone wild down there. And they suck up 300 Win Mags like their BB gun. She's had 2 pass-throughs on bull and elk guy. You're talking about shooting through an elk.
Yeah.
And she thinks it's normal. She's a school teacher. And she's about 5 feet tall. And she's just like the kind of lady who brings you cookies. Hey, Troy, how are you doing? And then you look at the wall and you're like 150-inch deer, 160-inch deer, 6 nil guy. There's her sable.
Yeah.
Stone cold killer.
She's the killer.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I want to talk about something. Because this is where I've found the most confusion for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Doing this. And I think a lot of people probably are going to find themselves in this situation. I am absolutely immersed in making sure my gear is right. I spend a lot of time on it. I'm about as hardcore as hardcore people get. About making sure my stuff's right, my setup's perfect. I devote a lot of time to this. Let's talk about the guy who works 85 hours a week, and he loves to bow hunt. He bow hunts the week. He's a weekend warrior. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really get time. Has a family that he has to spend time with. I'm finding out that it takes a long time to do this process. Right, the process is difficult. And
it is hard. Yep. And the learning curve at the beginning is very steep.
It is steep. Let's talk about this. I want to know what you think. Is it better for a guy and more ethical, let's say, for a guy who is that guy who just seriously doesn't have the time to devote to making sure everything is flying perfectly, bare shaft? Is it more beneficial for him to just go ahead and throw on a fixed blade that's going to fly wonky but it's going to be more lethal, or to throw on a mechanical that's going to fly more true? Is there a lesser evil to you?
No, inaccuracy is a problem. So if your fixed blade is going to shoot a 6-inch circle, that's terrible because the deer is going to move and that's going to be a 10-inch circle. No. I can't. The person who's in that situation needs to spend some time. Yeah. Sorry. You don't have to go through 15 hours of doing this, but it doesn't take a lot to get $10 worth of field points from Three Rivers and get a stiffer spine arrow shipped to your house while you're at work and shoot it through paper. You can do it fletched. You could do it. The fast button is go ahead and at least fletch paper tune.
Yeah,
and make sure those are all over YouTube. But I can't practically allow for that anymore.
Yeah,
because of my failure rate. Listen, when I was failing, I go to the shop, put me together some 340s, or snap some old inserts in there. We're going to get them. I was that guy, man. It's not like I haven't.
Yeah,
I've shot everything, and I'm. It doesn't even have to be 650. If you just get to 525 and fletch paper tune and then shoot fixed blades and make sure they're shooting straight. I've got a video on my channel called Broadhead Tuning and the Magic L. Mm-hmm. That is a very practical way. You just put two pieces of duct tape on a board and you or a piece of cardboard and you shoot at them and make sure your broadhead's going to stay on track. That's the fast button. It's not the super perfect button, but it's way more perfect. I just think for the sport and for your own frustration, if you work that much and you get off for a week, what's more frustrating? Losing a deer or, you know, starting this process in April and getting ready. That's the biggest thing I see. And I'm getting hammered right now. I get 150 messages a day. Easy. It's always, it's about six different answers. So it's not real hard to answer. Mm-hmm. Doesn't take me a lot of time, but I've been.
It's only six.
Just copy
There's
and paste.
There's only six things that's going to solve the world. There's only six.
Right. So yeah, it's a six or eight. It's not, it's either the bow is a piece of garbage. And it's, I had a guy who had a bow problem and he went in and the shim had fallen out. Mm-hmm. Really? You think your bow's not shooting straight? Maybe that's it. He said, these arrows don't fly. And I came back and said, didn't one of the shims fell out. So, okay. He said, shoot great now. I was like, yeah, baby. Cams were leaning like that. He didn't even know it, right? So I think I'm getting hammered right now with all the people winding up for elk and all that stuff. And it's moderately terrifying to be real honest. Especially, I'm quite concerned. And if you're one of my followers, if you've made the jump to hand sharpenable broadheads and you can't sharpen them, you shouldn't be shooting them ever. Never. Go get an iron will, go get a Magnus, go get a good out of the box, pretty sharp head, great sharp head, whatever it is. But if you can't sharpen a tough head or a Grizzly Stick Samurai, if you can't and you go out there with a half sharp broadhead, you just need to stop. Just don't go. It's not ethical. Mm-hmm. You're just going to be pissed. And then you're going to get on the message board and you're going to bash the broadhead companies or me. You're not going to tell us you went out there with a broadhead you shot seven times into a target. Nobody's going to admit to that.
Yeah.
Fair warning. Yeah. Right? I'm very serious about that. Back to the pigs. Dr. Ashby is a friend of mine. He lives about 4 hours from me. We've become great friends. He always says, man, if we could get the ones we lost, we could learn so much. But you never get them. Mm-hmm. They're gone, right? Not that anyone ever loses one or shoots a bad shot. I get that. Everybody's awesome. But occasionally, maybe somebody has a bad experience. Okay, let's go with that. You want to flush everybody out. I think, and I've talked to him a lot about this, I think it's broadhead damage. Feral hogs are covered in mud. Bull elk are covered in mud. And a lot of wallowing animals are covered in mud. They're thick. They've got really close together bones, a pig does. You will not miss the rib cage with anything on a pig. Mm-hmm. You will not slip between the ribs. And a rage is going to hit too. I've got pictures on my channel. I put a rage up against it. And next time you're eating a rack of ribs, put your finger on the meat. That's a 1,000-pound pig. It's no more than that wide.
Yeah.
So what I think, the reason why I think I was losing so many pigs in the beginning was I did not know how to sharpen broadheads. That's why I'm passionate about that. I really was. They really weren't that sharp. And I think the cheaper or less robust blade thicknesses, anything under 0.45 or 5 was getting destroyed on impact. I think the blades were compromised to the level they couldn't do anything. Remember, I'm a respiratory therapist and had a human cadaver. I don't think they were sharp enough to do damage inside. Everybody thinks if you just get it in there, they're going to die. No, those organs and all the arteries and stuff can move around a blunt object like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your blades look like that after they've penetrated the thorax. It's not going to do anything. I think that was a problem. I bet that's half of them. I bet it is because there's a lot of them. I got 12 inches, but I got half an arrow or so in. I got to shoot a 28 inch arrow. So I got up to half an arrow into them. So that's on the other side of the thoracic wall, even a big one. And they just run like, whatever. See ya, bro. And they're gone.
Yeah.
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 I've always appreciated your ability to take random objects that are whatever sitting next to you and just be like,
yeah, right.
Just like this, like you did it on purpose.
Which I'll never be able to look at a thing of ribs the same ever again.
But let's talk about this. So I mean, really, if you use it as like a, it would be the same as sticking a spoon in spaghetti, right? Like, it's not, it's going to go around it.
That's a very practical, take a butter knife, stick it through spaghetti.
Yeah, but then you take a sharp knife and do it, and it's going to cut those noodles, right? So you're talking about little, small, what would you call them? You would know. Like
I'll get more practical than that. Within the pulmonary system, everybody thinks about cutting the heart off, you know, cut the aortas, the big parts, shoot them in the heart, right? That's going to work. I heart shot a bunch of them with God knows what dull broadhead, and it works. Yeah. Because that muscle is so tight, it's going to do something to it, and they can't make it. Got it, okay? They go into shock, and there's some other stuff going on there. But within the pulmonary system and within the arterial system, it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. In one of my videos, I've got a piece of PVC, and I've got some smaller stuff, and then I've got monofilament to represent the way everything progressively goes down. If you're not cut, so in that example, I got 3/4 inch PVC. I've got some, you know, 1/4 inch tubing, and then I've got monofilament. If you're only cutting the 3/4 inch PVC, it's probably going to kill them, but the damage you do when you cut all of it is incredible. It's exponential to like the millionth power. Mm-hmm. We're talking about millions of arteries and airways that are just microscopic. It gets down to the blood cell level there.
And that also, if I'm hearing it correctly, it seems like, so it's easy to follow a 400-yard blood trail that's an actual blood trail that's pouring blood. It's harder to find a deer that's 400 yards away that you don't really have any reference to. So whenever you do that, that's also creating more
potential
to be able, if it does, let's say it does run a long ways, or let's say it lays down in a creek and trying to stop bleeding or whatever, this is creating more damage to potentially be able to find this deer.
The
in
best
those
example
scenarios.
Of that is, let's say you get a broadside deer and you shoot him 1.5 inches behind the crease vertically, your dead center. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
That's going to kill everything mm-hmm. on earth.
Right.
Okay? Elephants, everything. Right. But it is, there's the airways and everything are much smaller back there. It's just a fact. I don't give a damn what everybody thinks. It's just math.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge up front and gets smaller in the back. That's it.
Yeah.
So that hit is a bunch of really small stuff. If you don't cut that really small stuff, it's a long night and a bad blood trail. You call and get on the message boards. Well, my broadheads didn't work. I hit this one perfect with 250 yards. Yep. It was dull. And it went through some smaller airways. Plenty of damage. It'll kill them. Okay. But if the broadhead's dull, stuff rides over the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then secondarily, one of the pros, who apparently has no idea what the hell he's talking about, said he prefers to have the arrow broadhead left in the animal because it's going to shake around. Okay. First of all, this person shoots mechanical broadheads. Guess what the blades do when it's shaking around? They shake around. How many switchblade knives do you play with? No, let's take a jackknife. You know how a lockback knife mm-hmm. is safer than just a regular old grandpa's knife that opened up and you kind of get in the bind and wants to shut and cut your fingers off?
Mm-hmm.
A mechanical broadhead in there, the blades are moving. They're not cutting. Whatever's pushing on them is pushing back.
Yeah.
A fixed blade in that particular case would be better because if it shakes, it's fixed and it theoretically would cut things. But the blades on a mechanical broadhead, like the Rage is a great example, it's so popular. When you deploy them and push back on them, they're flapping all over the place. Mm-hmm. So whatever's pushing on them is pushing back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cutting more. There's going to be some cases where it is, but to rely on that. You're not smart. If you think you're relying on that, your best shot is completely blow through them and stick it in the dirt. You want nothing in the animal. You don't want them to think about it. You don't want them looking back saying, what the hell is that? You want it through.
Mm-hmm.
Zip. And I promise you, if you will get to 525 and start shooting accurate fixed blades, you're going to see deer that don't react. You watch mechanical broadhead videos, 90% of them, those deer leave like their ass is on fire.
Oh, yeah.
They know they've been punched. The deployment is like it's a punch. You can hear it pop.
Yeah.
You're a tough head, you're not going to hear it.
Right.
You're going to hear it. You'll be like, I've had multiple people say, I think I missed. And then they said the deer ran about 50 yards and fell over. And I said, well, I guess I didn't miss.
Yeah.
Because they went from a mechanical to a very efficient system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you're contributing to, so you're relying on, if you want to have those deer run like hell, because that's what you've seen, you're relying on, you've made a perfect hit. Mm-hmm. We're all not that good.
Right.
The deer move. There's a lot of things. You don't get warm-up shots. You're freezing ass cold. You got to piss, and here he comes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're kind of like that, swinging out of a tree.
Yeah.
You're relying on the Rage commercial marketing stuff. I'm being a little hard on them, but they only show the blood spraying out the sides, spraying on both sides. I got that. If I sell them the thing, I'd do it too. Mm-hmm. What if you make a bad hit?
Yeah.
Do you want that deer to run 40 yards and stand there and look around like, what the hell, if he takes 2 minutes to die? Or do you want him running like his ass is on fire? Mm-hmm. That's totally practical.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying shooting a fixed blade and a heavy arrow is going to fix that every time. But I've shot through multiple animals. They just don't run the same. It's weird. You need to kill about 10 animals before you start to see it. But they just aren't. They're really not booking it. Jake shot that pig. The first pig we killed was with the honey pup when they were down here was Jake. And he shot about an 85-pounder. And he shot right through it with a 700-grain arrow or something with a Masai on the front that I had sharpened. That was absolutely terrifying. Sharp. And the pig just, it ran pretty fast at first, and then it kind of just started bounding and went 40 yards. Right?
Yeah.
But it didn't tail down, butt down, dust, and I mean tearing through the woods. That's not good for blood trails ever.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a big change. It's probably the coolest thing I've experienced. Is I think my tracking jobs are shorter because they run and stop. I know I'm killing them faster because my broadheads are upgraded. I shoot 0.07 thick broadheads that are scary sharp because I've spent a lot of time breaking broadheads, learning to sharpen. No, I'm not trying to brag or anything. I've ruined a ton. Mm-hmm. But I think they don't – we find a lot of pigs – I intentionally try to set my speeders up where they've got about 40 yards or 30 yards of open before they hit the brush. Mm-hmm. It just helps you get a line of sight on them, right? Rather than they'll just be gone.
Yeah.
We find a lot of them 30 yards, 25 or 30 yards in the brush. Yeah. It's like they hit the brush and they go, oh, okay, and they slow down.
Yeah.
I don't know if they died in 10 seconds or in a minute.
Yeah.
Because I usually give them a half an hour. Yeah. But we find most of them are just walking over there and finding them.
Yeah.
So what would you?
I'll put my son on the blood trail. He's like a bird dog. Get on the blood trail. I just walk off.
And if you think about it, like, you got me thinking in terms of household products. But if you think about taking a water hose and that's running and just going whoop and just slinging it, those drops are going to be a lot further apart. You think about taking a water hose and just taking your arm and slowly going, and you're going to see a solid. I mean, it's the same concept. The faster they're running, the further apart the blood trail is going to be, and more.
I've seen that's a great that just popped into my head. So what I'm starting to see more often is exactly what you say. The first 30 yards is weird. There's usually blood at impact for some reason. I hadn't figured that one out. It's not like spilled out. There's just some blood at impact. I think it may have just come off the arrow or something, on a complete pass through shot, and then the blood trail is kind of crappy. For usually about 30 yards. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there, not pouring. And then all of a sudden, you start this. It goes from slinging the blood to they're walking.
Yeah,
yeah. And it just gets. You're like, well, okay, just take the shoes off and start walking. Close your eyes and whatever.
That was one of the knocks that was always told to me about fixed blades because I mean, and it's crazy because growing up, my dad shot the Easton aluminum. XXX75s that look like telephone poles and muzzies.
He shoots 600 grains. He didn't even know it.
He didn't even know it. And but then when the mechanicals all came around, it was like, oh, these blood trails are amazing. And that was one of the knocks was the blood wasn't it wasn't like what you see on TV, which we all know that's not what it really is in an actual hunting situation most of the time. But but Troy, for somebody who is just getting into the heavy arrow sharpening, all that stuff, you have a great sharpening video on your channel. So I encourage everybody, guys, go over and look at that. Because I mean,
it's on Hunting Public's channel.
Hunting Public.
It's on my likes videos. You won't find it on my channel. Go to the Hunting Public, and you'll see me with two broadheads.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right.
I don't know what it is.
But for somebody just getting into it, I know for a lot of us the knives that you carry around in your pocket aren't sharp because we're just intimidated by sharpening something for some reason.
Absolutely. 100 years ago, you had to sharpen your freaking blades. I mean, there was no disposable.
That's why everybody
knew I sharpened.
That's why he looks the way he does.
Yeah.
He
uses a rage.
It's dull.
So I'm pretty practical on that side as well. And in that video, I say this: if you don't want to sharpen broadheads, that's why I'm so high on the Magnus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good price point. He's got a lifetime warranty. I've killed the hell out of everything. And when I've got people come into my camp, my nephew's friends with their just arrows and stuff, they shoot the stinger.
Yeah.
There's no debate. They bring mechanicals or you're done. Not your place. You're shooting the stinger. Even if you're shooting it 4 feet to the right, you're not shooting that damn thing. So we work on that. But I'm a big proponent of replaceable blade heads that are high quality. So if you don't want to sharpen, Magnus, Ironwill, those kind of heads, those two heads right there, depends on what you want to spend.
Mm-hmm.
Ironwills are $100 for three, and God, Bill does a great job on those things. They are sharp. Solid. Don't email me and ask about the wide. Stop talking to me about that. Solid. Okay, thank you. I don't have any knock on the wide, and I bit one. I ricocheted one off of two bones on impact with a small pig and came out of its neck with the wide, and I bent the wide. It boomeranged around a corner. There's no broadhead going to survive that except for a tough head or an Ashby or something, a really serious head. It is what it is. I'm not knocking the wide because I bent it. The solid's the head to shoot. So you're going to buy an iron wheel, get the solid, tell Bill I sent you, all's well. But the max of that kind of thing, you can replace the blades, and you're good.
Yeah,
that's completely practical.
So I want to know that the most common question that you get from guys getting started with this. What is the most common thing? And then I'm going to ask you to just answer it right here, because if this inspires somebody to go do this, and there's a good chance that they're going to come up with the same issue. That's the purpose of this podcast, is to be a place where they can find this out. What is the most common thing that you hear guys ask?
We already covered it, but we didn't get this direct with it.
Okay.
When you're tuning your arrows, improve. I get these people who are like engineers, and they're freaking out because there's six bullet holes, and one of them is about this wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, dude, you're hanging on to the bow, stupid. It's freehand. Chill. Out, man.
Mm-hmm.
So the most common thing is, we talked about this earlier, you start to bear shaft tune or fletch tune, improve a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get down to small tears, then jump and shoot a broadhead and see if it's good. That's the most common thing, is people just get obsessed over, they think it's got to be either a bullet hole or you're failed.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't fail. You took your tear from here to here. You don't realize how much better that arrow's going to fly. And if they're all doing the same thing and they're tearing this wide, they're going to be fine because they're all doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you get it way out here, you get down to half an inch, you're good. Fletch one, put a broadhead on it, go see what it does. If it flies crazy, you got to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And then probably the second thing is people are just terrified to spine up. It's terrifying, apparently, to shoot 200 feet of spine arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the shops.
Yeah.
I get bashed by the shops.
You do.
Don't go in a shop and say Ranch Fair. You will get punched.
You
actually go in with a Joe Exotic mullet and the Joe Exotic face mask, and you're good.
Hey, I actually walked into a shop with my heavy setup. I mean, I had my 300 grain field points on. Oh, I did. I walked in. I got it all kind of tuned up, but I just wanted to make sure everything was square, was right, was good. So I walk in with my heavy arrow setup, and I show it to him. And he looks at me. He goes, "You've been watching that guy on YouTube, haven't you?" I go, "Ranch Ferry?" He goes, "Yeah, him." I'm like, "Yeah, I have." And he goes, "You don't need any of this killed deer." I go, you're right, but I'm going to have it, you know, and like this is what I want to shoot. And we started shooting, and when I shot and I went through his target at the shop and almost hit the back wall, he was like, man, you know, but you're right. You're not like that.
That's another comment that's been funny as people go into shops. They say, "What are you hunting?" Well, wait a second. Back up on that, right? They're admitting that arrow is way overkill for a deer. Mm-hmm. If speed's everything, then shoot a 400 grain arrow at an elephant, jackass. That's what I want to say to them. I mean, it doesn't work, but you can take an elephant arrow and kill a deer. So
why not get the one that can work?
Why not shoot something that's like an anvil?
Mm-hmm. Well, I gotta say, I'm really super excited this year about using my Full Metal jackets with my Tough Heads.
Metal jacket! Don't say that word. The worst arrow on the earth. That's you know what Full Metal jackets are good for. They're good for tomato sticks and for stirring the trash. And if you're making some kind of whiskey in the backwoods, that's good. It's just the right mass for stirring. It's really good. That's the worst arrow on the earth.
So tell me that. So here's the deal. Whenever somebody's looking and watching your videos, they go in the shop, and because this is going to be a lot of guys. A lot of guys are going to go into the shop. They don't have somebody.
And they're going right now.
And they're going.
They didn't hear your 90-day video, you know, or 60-day video. Yeah. They're going right now.
So let's shoot a heavy arrow. They go into the shop. I need a heavy arrow. Well, freaking Full Metal jacket. There it is. That's the only one a lot of shops are selling that are, you know, that are there, that are heavy, that they can get right then in a lot of way, in a lot of shops. So tell us why that's a bad idea.
Well, the hit system is the worst system for impact on the planet of Earth.
Explain that. Explain the hit system.
So the hit system is a hidden insert inside the shaft. Mm-hmm. Your broadhead is touching the end of the bare cutoff shaft. Inside the carbon jacket, inside the aluminum jacket is a carbon arrow that's made of a bazillion fibers. I think I sent you the pictures of those exploded Full Metal jackets, didn't I?
Oh, yeah.
The ones that look like a flower because the broadhead's 5 inches down the shaft.
They're just like...
So if the hidden insert slips at all, the arrow, where's the broadhead going?
Back.
This is remember where I started. This is impact, penetration, effectiveness. You've lost all structural integrity.
Yeah.
The shaft goes like this and starts to catch things, and it's going to stop. Mm-hmm. We also gave up aluminum a long time ago because they get micro bends and things like that, that will throw your arrows wonky. But the real reason is you want to put a big, heavy bullet on the front of a very light tail. So you do not want a heavy arrow shaft. You want a normal weight arrow shaft, and you want to front load it. You want the point to pull the arrow. So when you do one of these systems and you get around 17, 18% FOC, you start to see the accuracy improve and the arrow flight improve because the point is pulling the fletchings. In a traditional system, much like hitting a nail with a hammer, when you hit a nail a little wonky, it goes sideways. Mm-hmm. When you're pushing the broadhead with a heavy mass object and it gets a little bit of deflection, just hits a rib, nothing square on any animal. What's that game? What's the little game that all the kids play where everything's square? Minecraft. Mm-hmm. It's not a Minecraft animal.
I don't think kids are playing that anymore. But whatever.
Well, so anyway, everything in that thing's square. There's nothing square in a deer. Everything's a rhomboid or a radius or a curve.
Yeah.
So let's just say your arrow goes in like this and hits something, even with a fixed blade, and just that. Mm-hmm. The back of the arrow goes like this and goes like that. Whereas if you have in this much space 300 grains, is pulling the mm-hmm. same thing could occur,
yeah,
but it's pulling the tail.
Yeah.
You have this high mass object in this much space that's pushing. One of the guys on the Ashby Foundation, when he was trying to do heavy arrows, did a full metal jacket and loaded the front. Shot like 250 spines. It was a humongous balanced arrow that was only like 10% FOC. And he shot an Impala and hit the shoulder blade, and a broadhead broke off and went through the Impala and hit the dirt. The shaft was sticking out 10 to 20 inches.
That's crazy.
I mean, on the video, it's awesome because you see the arrow stop and then you see dust. You're like, what the hell is that? And the full metal jacket broke off and the broadhead just kept going.
Yeah. So
200 grand single bevel.
So you're saying if a guy walks into a shop, they hear this podcast, walk into shop, they should not be concerned about GPI. They should be concerned about spine, 250, 300, right?
They should get a stiffer arrow, a normal carbon arrow, and then load the front. We talked about that. So you can go get a normal arrow, gold tip, you get a Sirius, follow, you can get Easton Axis, whatever's in the shop. I don't care about that. Put a stock insert in there. Mm-hmm. Do not get the hit if you get the axis. We already discussed that.
Yes.
And then do not get the hit on anything. The worst. I mean, unless you're shooting 3D and it's still terrible. And then go to Three Rivers or Ethics Archery and get a set of heavy field points and go through the process we discussed earlier, mm-hmm. which is just shooting with a stock insert and much heavier mass points and work through the progression.
Yeah.
And then you'll eventually decide what broadhead you want to shoot and then back into the inserts.
Yeah. So
I'm actually a big fan of stock inserts and just heavier broadheads because, Bubba, that tough head's a beast. It's not gonna push back on the insert.
Yeah.
I got a 600 grain Bishop on a stock insert on a 250 spine arrow. It weighed like 980. And the pig I shot had a bad freaking day. It didn't stop. I bet that arrow was going like 185 off a compound.
I know.
It was a little critical on drop.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know with it getting into the broadheads, like the heavier ones, I just bought a pack of 300 VPAs. And
those are great.
Pulled it out of the package and did your cardboard test. And, man, that thing just right out of the package just was awesome. But you can just look at the blades and go, man, that's a heavy blade. Like it's like, and even I know you got some VPAs and you got a tough head and
I got VPAs and cutthroats.
But just the how heavy and sturdy the blades look is.
Well, they're monolithic, right? They run them through a CNC machine.
Yes.
So it's a piece of stock steel. It's all the same steel.
Yeah.
There's no parts moving around. It can't break.
Yeah.
They don't break.
Yeah.
I tell Wojo at Toughhead, I said, you got to put some flappers on there or something. The damn things don't break. Like we got to get some things to break so we can increase your sales. Like that's the way to do it, right? I said, Toughhead, you're done, right? I can't break them. I'll try.
And a lot of these companies are giving lifetime warranties as well, mm-hmm. like saying if it breaks, send it to us. You know, that's what I'm seeing a lot of. A lot of these companies.
I don't know that they're trying to say that their stuff's no good. I don't know how you're taking that, and I'm not accusing you of anything. I think they realize that they make 80,000 of them at a time, and some days the machine's a little wonky. Mm-hmm. And for you people out there who think that's unacceptable, get a job running a CNC machine to make 80,000 broadheads. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, just shut your face because it's a hard thing to build broadheads, make sure they're straight, make sure that they spin straight. But they do spin tests on them and stuff. They spend so much money trying to make sure that broadhead comes out so that anybody on earth can just screw it on and at least it'll be straight. They can't fix you not being able to shoot and your arrows aren't tuned. We can't fix that. But the lifetime warranty thing is, I think, like I said, if I was running one of those shops, I would offer a lifetime warranty in case just one day, right? I mean, something gets off. The blades aren't sharp. I don't know how those machines work, but something's occasionally, I bet they get a little sideways. I bet they got boxes of them that are just trash.
Yeah.
Well, you've got, when you think about it, I was saying it because I think it's a great thing.
I do too.
And here's why. Let's take Bishop, for example. Let's take a Bishop Holy Trinity, right?
$120.
I mean, you're looking at a lot of money. That may be a bad example. I don't know if they have a lifetime warranty.
Iron Will does.
Iron Will. Yep. $100. And guys are going to be like, well, crap, I can buy my rage. It's for $40. Well, yes, you can. But the moment you shoot that rage, you're done. And you're going to go spend another $44 on rage broadhead. So at the end of the day, you're still spending the same amount of money, but you're going to keep spending that. So, you know, I think I've had to learn that. Like, it is an initial investment. And then, but after that investment, you're good. Yeah. Like, you're.
Yeah. BPAs and tough heads aren't that expensive.
Mm-hmm. No.
No.
Tough heads are what, $60 or whatever?
Yeah, and BPA. I think it was like $55 for my 300 grains. Right. And it's cheaper for, you know, lower. Troy, one of the things I did want to ask is that. Okay, I have my VPAs in. Do you shoot every broadhead with on your arrows, or do you just take one broadhead as like your practice?
I've got one that's just to the side.
Okay.
So you're trusting
I don't do that.
You're trusting that the company that you bought from is they're going to be the exact same. That
I spin every one of them.
Okay.
So I'm more anal than that. When I build a set of arrows, my hunting arrows never get shot.
Okay.
Never.
That's why you have the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah.
Right. So I will find the ones you won't, when you insert tune, not everyone's going to insert tune. But if it's got a little wobble, it'll shoot a field point. Mm-hmm. It'll be fine. It's just a mast. They make those things a million miles at a time. Once again, back to the CNC machine kind of idea, right? They're not all perfect.
Right.
So that's why you find the best. Well, you insert tune, you do the best you can with six, and three of them are absolutely perfectly plumb. And when you knock tune them, they're perfect. I screw broadheads on, spin them, and I set them aside. I do not shoot hunting arrows.
Okay.
But there's only four or five of them.
Yeah.
I got four dozen because I test stuff and I cut them off and do all kind of stupid stuff nobody wants to think about, trying to figure it out. So. The best of the best of the best in this 30-minute process sit aside, and they go hunting. That's it.
They go straight in the quiver, and that's it. Okay.
That's it. I've got two arrow boxes. I put them in arrow box. I know that those are my hunting arrows. That's all they do. I break about half the arrows I shoot at pigs because of where I shoot them, and they're short. I shoot a lot of elevated shots, and they tend to. They'll pass through and stick in the dirt, and they'll take the arrow and break them off because they literally have legs this long, right? So it doesn't look like I get a lot of pass throughs on some of my videos because it's in the dirt and they run off with it or whatever. But and I also aim for the I try to break the offside shoulder every time.
But you do have one broadhead that's on it. You have one broadhead that's on a practice arrow, right?
Yeah, I've got that. I've got at the test lab, and here I've got some stingers. And some hornets that have been shot, and they're dull. They're straight, but they're dull. Yep. They're just on the shelf.
Gotcha.
And I have 8 million broadheads now. People send them to me all the time. It's just unbelievable. It's a stupid box I've got full of stuff. So I can pull out pretty much anything and give you one test head, and that's that. The reason why people are concerned about this is because you've never had fixed blade broadheads fly because you haven't wasted any time making your arrows fly.
Right.
So you think that you can, and that used to be why people numbered their arrows. I do it because if I get when I'm shooting them flesh, if one of them's weird, then I want it out. Mm-hmm. It could be soft in the middle. Something could go on. I mean, it's a mass production process, right? They're not trying to make them. They're trying to make them as cheap as they can.
Right.
And you would too if you own the shop.
Right.
So they're going to make a couple of mistakes, or the product's not going to be right one day or something, right? So. I just have one that I shoot for practice, and it never goes hunting. I can sharpen them, but I've got my hunting heads, and then I've got one to toy around with. If you can sharpen, then you're fine. That's one of the cool things about tough heads and BPAs and cutthroats and all that. You can shoot all of them. If you can't sharpen, don't go out there. Buy another broadhead.
Don't go.
Have I said that? Have I said that yet today?
Couple times.
Question. All right. This is going to be the end, I think. And this is what I have seen people, and I've struggled with. A lot of people that I have talked to have struggled with this at some point in time. All right. You paper tuned, you've knock tuned, you've insert tuned, you've bear shaft tuned, you've done all of the things, and you get that thing I mean, it's doing great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very little variation in straightness when it hits the target at 30 yards, bare shaft. I mean, mm-hmm. and you found that. You put fletchings on it, you shoot that, it's still just driving tacks. On your perfect arrow, I mean, it's flying perfect. You throw a broadhead on, all of a sudden, you've got problems. Not much.
I've not solved that one.
Do you hear that a lot?
No.
Not a lot. So it's...
Most of the time, what happens to people is they fletch, and their fletchings are in a position that they make contact with the cables. That's what has happened. That I don't get this a lot. I honestly don't have a lot of people who have trouble.
Really?
If they really do everything. I've answered enough messages now, I can tell when the guys are lying to me.
Yeah.
And I rat their ass out. Mm. I'm pretty blunt on email when people are asking me to fix their stuff and then they're just going round and round in circles.
Yeah.
You didn't do everything. What didn't you do? But the most common thing that people do is, and this is on my channel as well, is how to fletch after you've not tuned. The most common thing, I had a guy from Australia send me a video and he goes, this ranch grade guy's not such a dumbass. I fletched my arrows and I were flying crazy with broadheads and I happened to watch this video and I looked down and every one of them was fletched in a position that the veins were hitting the cables. Right as it comes off the string, it's just a touch.
It's just touching it. Mm-hmm. So, is there on that same note, is there something that you see people like in the, and when I need to back up. When I say this, I have now found multiple issues that I've dealt with. I have dealt with most.
You have a bow that's not right. You got to stop on that. You got to tell everybody that. Who has the bow that's crazy? You?
So that's what I was going to say. I've got some.
I'll rat you out on email, man.
No, I mean, there's things on here, on my bow specifically, where to get the perfect, I mean, I'm shooting the bare shafts correct. I mean, I'm following all the steps, and the things are right. We're getting them. I'm shooting the bullet holes. I mean, it's lining up. But when I'm looking and, like, centering the bow, it doesn't seem... Things seem weird, right? It seems off-centered. I've heard you say multiple times, like, if something seems weird or seems off or not normal, just get over it. If that's the way that your bow wants to shoot, then get over it.
I need to do a better job with that. So if you're not running it down the middle, if the rest is kind of in a wacky position, way to one side, you got a bow issue or you have a spine issue. That's what I've been able to find out. I'm still learning.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I've posted a few videos and I've had people say, see, you didn't cover that. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I don't know everything right now. I'm only as smart as I am in the conversation we had behind us, everything I believe in. But I'm progressively learning about these. That's how I've learned about the torque sensitive bows.
Yeah.
I said, Average Jack, Nate Sellers did a great video. I called him one day. And I said, can you do a torque video, because I hate that stuff. I hate bows. They suck. And he said, sure. So he showed a bear shaft with a good grip. He intentionally torqued it one way or the other and made the bear shaft fly sideways 4 or 5 inches.
Yeah,
that was me.
And I constantly send that to people and they say, wow, I tried that. It worked. So I'll get better. How's that?
Yeah.
But I haven't had very many people with the kind of issue you and I talked about yesterday. That's really unusual.
Yeah.
And then I'm still pondering it to this day. I wish I knew more about bows. That's where I start to fall off, right?
Yeah.
And I'll admit that they bore me to death. If it doesn't shoot, I sell it. I'm gonna buy another one. And so that's my golden rule. But sure. I have not had many people who really went through the whole thing. I've had people who tried to make, who say, I don't have a lot of money. I'm trying to make a 340 work. I say, don't go over 150 grains, and they push it. Mm-hmm. And they go ahead and buy 200 grain broadheads anyway.
Yeah.
And then they say it doesn't fly. I say, yeah, I know. That's an arrow that will tune at 100 grain point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It will bear shaft with 100 grain point. I got that.
Yeah.
Won't with 225.
Yeah.
But then you're struggling with then you, I mean, yeah, that's great that it bear shafts. You're trying to get a bear shaft tune with a heavy mm-hmm. front end to right. get so maximum penetration. That's where we're at.
Right. You can get a 400 spine arrow on a 65-pound boat with an 85-grain head. It'll be tweaky as hell. It'll be like a, you know, like a chimpanzee on barbiturates. But nonetheless, you can get it to bear shaft.
Yeah.
It just won't be. It won't behave. It'll do what it wants occasionally, and it'll really show your form. You've got to be really good to make that work. Mm-hmm. At a 340 up to 70 pounds, I've done it. It'll work. But if you're loading the front, you got to spine up. Mm-hmm. Or it's going to go banana, and it's going to drive you insane.
Yeah.
So
I think also too, one of the things, Troy, you encouraged me with, and your usual blunt self, was when I got out in the garage, I must have shot. I got 6 arrows, 5 points, and I must have shot literally over 150 times, and mm-hmm. and I was knock tuning everything, and every single one was hitting the exact same way. And I actually sent you a message on Facebook. School about you, yep. you actually reply to stuff, and you're yep. like, so you asked me some questions, and then you just simply said, well, you're also human too, so
there's that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so right. what I did was I simply just, and me and Parker talked about it, I just took my grip that was like this, and I just brought it in just to see, and man, it was like night and day. It was like all of a sudden it just went from this, which wasn't bad. I mean, I could
explain what you're saying because there's some people listening.
There are some people listening that I was doing this, went and dove off into this whole 700 grain arrow build thing, was shooting knock left in my garage, which was only about 7 to 10 yards. Okay, was shooting knock left, was not bad knock left, and yeah, right. And was doing what Troy had said, was knock tuning, doing all this stuff, and man, every single arrow at every single weight was doing that. I even took a fletching and I put it on there and it went right, but I didn't want to do that. I wanted to get a really good bear shaft first. So then I just simply did the opposite of what I was doing grip wise. So I was gripping, trying to push in the bow. I switched it and tried to actually push towards my hand, if that makes sense. So if you're watching, you can see it.
Yeah, you pulled the tail in line.
Yes. And then yeah. as soon as I did that, it was like boom, boom.
Right.
Boom.
So you're just going to have you. Okay. So this is, I was making fun of people shooting reps and stuff. You need to learn that
mm-hmm.
because, well, there's a couple things there. I would encourage you to learn that. I would encourage you to shoot bear shafts mm-hmm. to learn that.
Yeah.
Don't shoot fletched or you'll never see it.
Mm-hmm.
But, fletchings will correct that.
Right.
So when you're in the woods, I don't think about the grip. It's like trying to swing a golf club and thinking about turning your knee and
right,
the left
right.
arm straight and
right.
pucker your ass. And God forbid the Titleist is looking at me and you just hit it 30 feet, right?
Yeah.
So I would, if you have a grip torque sensitive bow, I would shoot bear shafts through paper a lot to help you be punished mm-hmm. when you do things wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's
also,
immediate feedback, right? It's like yeah. being hit with a stick. It's right there looking yeah. at you like, oh, you're dumbass grip. Duh.
Yeah. And it was funny because I must have shot 150 times with my old form. And I mean, I could do it. No problem. But I swapped my form and 20 shots in, my whole shoulder was fatigued because it was not used to that.
Yeah.
It was not used to that grip. It was crazy. Absolutely right. crazy.
So
yeah. A lot of bows that like that. And they just, that's the way it is. You have to learn that.
Yeah.
So Troy, I'm Mr. Ferry.
Mr. Ferry. Thank you.
We're up here close to an hour and a half. I know you got stuff you got to get done, and man, I just wanted to say thank
man,
you so
man,
much for
thank
coming
you
on
so
the show.
Much.
Is there anything else that we have not covered that you're like, man, I would be doing a disservice to everybody listening mm-hmm. to this or watching this if I didn't say this?
No, you've got to spend time. We've already covered it. If you don't spend time working with your arrows and making sure your bow's shooting straight and sharp broadheads, then I've done nothing here. You didn't hear me because you're blocked out because you think 300 feet per second is your deal, and that's fine. I don't care. But it really makes a difference. My story is failure. It's not success.
Yeah.
My bow hunting story is that. And it went from zero to hero. And I have a giant family who I get to test this on who don't know what the hell they're doing. I tune their bows. I give them arrows. They're shooting the bishop. They don't know that. Right? They got a on their string. They got a, you know what? Let me think about it. About a $200 arrow. No. So I've been able to practically test it like a student.
Yeah.
And they're just pounding. It's been night and day. So, you know.
Can I be in your, family? Can I be in your family? I've never shot a,
He is from Texas. He is from Texas.
I like Whataburger.
Coopers?
You gotta shoot my bow. You can't shoot that crazy thing you're shooting. You know, wonky willy with the four wheels on it or whatever the hell you got going there.
Hey, dude, it's doing some weird stuff. It's doing some weird stuff.
It is.
And I'm trying to figure this crap out, and I'm like, I'm close. It's not like I'm missing deer and getting wonky arrow flight. I'm good, but it's. I feel like with the amount of time that I've anyway, we can talk about it later. But man, again, super appreciate everything. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yes,
tell our listeners and viewers where they can find out more about Ranch Ferry.
Just go to Google and type in two words, Ranch Ferry. You won't miss me. There's not a lot of competition.
That's literally
there's not a lot of competition for the Ranch Ferry.
That's awesome, man.
I'm in a pretty good spot. You won't forget. No, it really works. So thanks again, guys, for everything, and I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah.
It's good to spread the word.
All right, thank you so much, Mr. Ranch Ferry, for coming on the show. I'm very grateful for it. It's been a great time. And if you guys are listening to this, that is awesome. But this is a really good episode to go back and watch on YouTube. It's actually going to be on YouTube. If you listen to this right when it comes out, which is Monday, August the 10th. By the way, also, if you did not know this, our episodes are starting on Mondays from now on. We're going to be on Monday morning. You will be able to wake up and listen to Southern Ground Hunting Podcast as soon as you wake up, which is a lot of fun. So if you did not know that, that's going to be from here on out. Monday mornings will be right here, either on the Sportsman's Nation Whitetail feed or on the Southern Ground feed, the standalone feed. So I don't remember where I was going with that. We also put these podcasts on YouTube, and this is one of those ones that will be really good to go back and watch. And watch a lot of the things that we were talking about. Troy, Mr. Ranch, he kind of, I guess, gives a visual explanation with his hands, and so be a good one to do that. So, yeah, that's the Southern Ground YouTube channel. Again, we just recently gave away a Tethered Phantom through the YouTube channel. Make sure you go subscribe to that. We will be doing more giveaways in the near future on YouTube, and I would really appreciate it if you guys would check that out. Check out the channel. Check out the videos that we got up right there. I'm working on putting a lot of the older content on the YouTube channel as well, and stuff that from the last several years of filming my hunts and kayak hunts and saddle hunts and stuff like that. So I'm trying to get that up there as soon as possible before the season starts here. I'll be hunting at the end of this month, the end of August. I'll be deer hunting. So I'm trying to get all my old stuff up before then, and it has been very difficult, but it's doable. And then, obviously, once the season kicks in, we're going to have new content rolling, hopefully weekly. And, yeah, I'd love it if you guys would go check that out. Subscribe to the Southern Ground Hunting channel on YouTube. Other than that, guys, I don't have anything else. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thanks for checking it out. And, yeah, you guys stay safe. If you're going to be in the woods, remember that God gave you dominion over the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and the beasts of the earth. So go out and exercise that dominion. We'll talk to you next time.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.